Russia and Ukraine account for about 29% of global wheat exports. In stock markets, European shares fell to their lowest in a year, with Germany and Italy's benchmark index slipping into a so-called bear market.
The economic impact of this crisis, of this war, is not something that we're going to be able to that the world will not be able to undo, even if there is a peace treaty in the short term, because the disruptions and the lack of confidence in the old geopolitical arrangements is a permanent damage that will profoundly affect the world economy.
What should be taken into account is that you can't simply remove a cog from the system and expect it to continue working without a hitch. Sanctions might hurt Russia for the short term, but in the long run, everyone will lose.
A U.S. delegation of senior State Department and White House officials traveled to the Venezuelan capital, Caracas, to meet with President Nicolas Maduro's government. The meeting is the highest-level visit by U.S. officials to Venezuela in years. It also coincides with an ongoing conflict between Russia and Ukraine. The question is, why should such a meeting take place at this time? Venezuela and the U.S. severed all diplomatic relations in 2019 following Washington's recognition of pro-U.S. opposition leader Juan Guaido as Venezuela's interim president over the legitimate president Nicolas Maduro. The U.S. then imposed sanctions on individuals with ties to Maduro's government and on companies involved in exporting Venezuelan oil to provoke regime change in the Latin American country. Venezuela soon felt the impact of sanctions as its oil production reduced significantly. In response, Caracas turned to Russia, as well as Iran and China, for diplomatic and economic aid. Russian energy companies and banks have since played a major role in Venezuela's exporting of oil. Fast forward to today, Russia is involved in a conflict with Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin says he will only halt his country's military operation if Ukraine is stopped fighting and if Moscow's demands are met. On the other hand, Western governments have targeted Russia with a barrage of sanctions. The U.S. has imposed a ban on the exports of specific technologies to its oil refinery sector. Washington has also blacklisted over a dozen of Russian entities with ties to the country's military and defense sectors. Meanwhile, European Union has excluded seven Russian banks from the global SWIFT payment system. The bloc has also banned two major news networks, namely Russia Today and Sputnik. And Germany has decided to freeze the Nord Stream 2 project. In a bid to punish Russia for attacking Ukraine, the US and its allies targeted Moscow's oil and gas sector via sanctions. And countries like Venezuela are potential substitutes. In addition, while the war in Ukraine continues unabated, Washington is paying closer attention to Moscow's allies in Latin America. Current and former U.S. officials believe that's because Washington thinks they could become security threats if the standoff with Russia deepens.
The U.S. is going to try to divide Russia from Latin America and the Caribbean. And interestingly enough, according to the White House itself, a lot of the sanctions imposed on Russia over this whole Ukraine nonsense are designed to target Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua, because those countries are also sanctioned by the U.S. And those countries are also dependent on Russia for aid. Russian support and aid is one of the main reasons why these countries have been able to overcome the sanctions to begin with. So in a sense, the U.S. is targeting these countries indirectly by hitting Russia, and I think people are not going to fall for it.
In a public speech on Thursday, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro stated that his country is open to discussing oil deals with investors from all around the world, including the U.S. In case Washington restricts the imports of Russian oil, Venezuela would be able to replace some of the lost supplies. The U.S. sees Latin America as an opportunity to advance its agenda among Latin American countries allied with Russia. But the U.S. is not that popular in Latin America for many reasons. In a slightly less than 100 years, from 1898 to 1994, the U.S. intervened successfully to change governments in Latin America at least 41 times, or once every 28 months for an entire century.
The U.S. has launched a number of military coups to try to overthrow the left-wing government in Venezuela. It has used all diplomatic and sanction means to try to do so. None of this has worked because the Venezuelan government has the backing of the people and also internationally has the support of countries like Russia, Iran, China, Nicaragua, Cuba, and many others that stand in solidarity with the Venezuelan government.
The United States has long interfered in the internal affairs of Nicaragua, a Latin American country it once occupied from 1912 to 1933 as part of the Banana Wars. Washington has imposed sanctions against Nicaragua's government and president Daniel Ortega's inner circle since 2018 when protests erupted in the country. Meanwhile, Cuba suffers from chronic shortages of electricity and food exacerbated by brutal U.S. sanctions. It also holds Washington responsible for stirring up violence in the country and blames its economic woes mainly on U.S. embargoes. And there is a long list of other countries in the region that have been victims of the U.S. sanctions and its intervention in their domestic affairs. While Washington seeks to find a substitute oil producer to fill in the place of Russia to further pressure Moscow by imposing stricter sanctions on its oil and gas, U.S.'s dark history continues to haunt it. Will Putin's Latin American allies stay loyal to him, or will they forget all hardship the U.S. has inflicted on their people for years? The Western media's portrayal of Ukraine's suffering is somehow different compared to those suffering from wars in other countries like Yemen, Libya, Ethiopia, Palestine, and Syria has sparked widespread criticism. News coverage of civilian Ukrainians defending their country by making Molotov cocktails and arming themselves with the state-given machine guns has also been celebrated as heroic, and these people have been called freedom fighters. This empathy has not been voiced for others, like Palestinians who experience an identical crisis, yet are labeled terrorists when defending their land. The suffering in Ukraine must be highlighted. However, portraying Ukraine's pain as more human shows the deep hypocrisy at play. Now, the West has come under criticism over what is seen as double standards regarding conflicts in other parts of the world.
You're happy to correctly use the most strong and robust language to describe the crimes against humanity of Vladimir Putin, but you will not use the same strength of language when it comes to describing the Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, when it is now being documented and detailed by two of the most respected human rights organizations in the world, and indeed has been alleged by dozens and dozens of non-governmental organizations, and to be honest, anybody who looks honestly.
Barrett asked whether the Irish Parliament will impose sanctions against Israel. He also asked whether the Irish legislative body would support calls for referring Israel to international courts over its crimes against humanity. This is not the first time the Western media has shown its bias. A similar narrative was pushed against Palestinians last year. Israel's decades-long occupation, its crippling blockade and military grip over Palestinians, as well as a wave of demolitions, led to a two-week war that killed around 260 Palestinians and 13 Israelis. News outlets and political figures spoke out on the conflict, but it started with the opposite end of the story, starting with Palestinian reactions and violence. While Israel was the real aggressor, they focused on rockets fired by the Hamas resistance movement that came later in retaliation. The double standards of the US and the West are the focal point of tension, violence, and bloodshed, and make Washington an unacceptable mediator and the country that is unable to achieve stability in the world. The war in Yemen is another example. Scant coverage of the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Yemenis killed by arms from Western countries, especially the US. Yet the media portrays the real Yemeni army as the aggressor, and the ones doing the bombing as the ones who are following the path of righteousness. More than 1.3 million Ukrainians have fled their homeland so far since the beginning of the conflict with Russia. Countries like Hungary and Poland are being praised for letting in tens of thousands of people, and the EU is preparing measures that would offer temporary residence permits, as well as access to employment and social welfare. But the open-door policy of several states has highlighted an apparent double standard. These refugees can enter some countries more easily than those escaping violence in the Middle East or North Africa. For instance, Poland has welcomed those fleeing the Ukraine war while it pushed back against a wave of immigrants crossing over from Belarus, mostly from the Middle East and Africa, last year. Also, the reporting of this tragedy has seen double standards and Eurocentric bias that hold one group of human lives more valuable than others who are suffering conflicts in countries such as Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Palestine.
But this isn't a place, with all due respect, like Iraq or Afghanistan, that has seen conflict raging for decades. You know, this is a relatively civilized, relatively European, I have to choose those words carefully too, city where you wouldn't expect that or hope that it's going to happen.
This was just one of many remarks on media outlets drawing a line between the conflict unfolding in Ukraine and those in other parts of the world. Many also drew a comparison between Europe's welcoming of Ukrainian refugees and the influx of Syrians, Iraqis, and Afghans, which was declared a migrant crisis. The suffering of refugees from these countries is being played down and almost made to seem that their lives are not as important in comparison to the lives of those fleeing Ukraine. The Western media have been doing a biased reporting of the ongoing crisis in Ukraine. The dehumanization of people of color, of those from countries that are not in the West, needs to stop. More needs to be done to improve for the future of building a united, wider society, which values every single person as a human being.
Russia's decision to attack Ukraine has ushered in a new era in its relations with the West. The United States and its allies are supplying Ukraine with arms and providing it with intelligence to fight Russian troops. But they are not directly involved in the clashes.
The only way to actually implement something like a no-fly zone is to send NATO planes into Ukrainian airspace and to shoot down Russian planes. And that could lead to a full-fledged war. In Europe, President Biden has been clear that we are not going to get into a war with Russia.
Of course the U.S. doesn't want that, because if a war breaks out between the West and Russia, the concept of mutually assured destruction will be on the table, meaning that the two sides, both nuclear powers, will be risking total annihilation. To avoid the doomsday scenario, the West has resorted to another form of warfare, the economic type. The United States and many of its allies have announced unprecedented sanctions on Russia, targeting its financial, banking, and oil and gas sector, among others. These include sanctions on Russia's central bank, exclusion of several Russian banks from the SWIFT payment system, and a ban on Russian banks and companies' access to Western capital markets. In other words, Russia's engagement in dollar-denominated business will be severely affected. But let's not forget that for every action, there will be an opposite reaction.
Look, the dominance of the dollar has afforded America great global power, but it is now under real threat as never before, as Russia, China, and others economically challenge the US. Many are now seeking to ditch their dependence on the dollar, as Washington has continued to abuse its status as issuer of the world's reserve currency for decades, really, since after the Second World War.
Russia has already been working on plans to reduce its dependence on the trade in the dollar. Russian President Vladimir Putin visited Beijing for the opening of the Winter Olympic Games in China in early February and met with his Chinese counterpart. It was President Xi Jinping's first face-to-face meeting with another head of state in nearly 2 years, which highlights the importance of the visit. The two leaders discussed the need to broaden bilateral trade in national currencies due to the unpredictability surrounding the use of the dollar. Russia has been pursuing the policy for a while. Back in April 2021, the share of Russian exports in dollars fell below 50% for the first time. Moscow's trade with Beijing is mostly responsible for the dive. There's room for improvement, though, as a majority of trade between China and Russia is done in euro, with just over 30% of the transactions conducted in their national currencies. The sweeping sanctions on Russia may push China to speed up measures to break with the US currency and create its own means of payment. The obvious option is the yuan, which is getting stronger than ever. In July, international trade in the Chinese currency set a new record, with many predicting that at this rate, the yuan will become the world's third strongest currency by 2030.
Beijing has been actively encouraging the use of its currency in trade transactions, especially under its massive Belt and Road Initiative, with China recovering more strongly than other big nations after the COVID crisis that we've had. Foreign capital has been flooding in too as Beijing opens its financial markets.
This means only one thing. Given the economic alliance between China and Russia, the sanctions might temporarily hurt Moscow, but in the long run, the West will be disarmed of its economic pressure tool.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight. The White House is stopping Russian energy imports, a move which could push American gas prices even higher. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Gianna Smialek, Alan Rappaport, and Jason Horowitz. The piece is titled "Ban on Russian Oil Could Hit the U.S. Economy as Gas Prices Rise." The ban on Russian energy imports announced by President Joe Biden on Tuesday, 8th of March, could have meaningful consequences for the U.S. economy, pushing prices at the gas pump higher when inflation is already rapid, although how long-lasting that impact might be remains uncertain. "We're banning all imports of Russian oil and gas and energy," President Biden said, speaking at a White House briefing. He said the plan would target the main artery of the Russian economy. While he acknowledged that the move would likely push gas prices in the United States up, he blamed Russia for that reality. The ban applies to imports of Russian oil, liquefied natural gas, and coal. It also prohibits new U.S. investments in Russia's energy sector, and it blocks Americans from financing or enabling foreign companies that are making investments to produce energy in Russia. Europe imports far more of its supply from Russia than the United States, but energy markets are global, and the mere threat of a ban has pushed commodity prices higher in recent days. "Things have been so volatile," said Omar Sharif, founder of Inflation Insights, noting that it was difficult to tell how much of the rise in oil prices in recent days traces back to this specific ban. But the conflict in Ukraine is clearly pushing commodity gas prices higher, so much so that the national average gas price could rise to nearly $4.50 this month, he said, assuming we don't move anymore. While the oil and gas ban is almost sure to push inflation higher in the United States, economists have said that the scale of the economic consequences would depend in large part on how it was structured. For instance, it would likely make a big difference globally and in markets if Europeans also ban Russian oil and gas imports, and it is not yet clear whether or not to what extent that will happen. A ban across many countries would severely reduce and disrupt energy supply on a global scale, and already high commodity prices would rise further, Caroline Bain, an economist at Capital Economics, wrote in a research note ahead of the announcement, estimating that the price of the global oil benchmark, the Brent crude, would settle in at about $160 per barrel in that case. The Brent crude price jumped by about 6% to roughly $130 per barrel by the middle of the day on Tuesday, 8th of March 2022. By comparison, it was about $78 per barrel at the end of 2021. It is not yet clear how many countries will adopt a similar ban. The White House signaled this week that the United States could act separately in blocking imports of Russian oil, noting that countries in Europe are far more reliant on Russian energy, something that President Biden also alluded to on Tuesday. "Many of our European allies and partners may not be in a position to join us," he said. That includes efforts by the European Union to lessen its dependence on Russian energy. Britain indicated on Tuesday, 8th of March, that it would take its own steps to ban imports of Russian energy products. Kwasi Kwarteng, Britain's business and energy secretary, said it would phase out imports of Russian oil and oil products by the end of 2022. Other European countries are under increasing pressure to follow suit. "Everything's on the table," Frank Reitzer, the French Minister for Foreign Trade, told the France Info radio station on Monday, adding that France had to look at potential bans on oil and gas imports from Russia with regard to consequences in terms of pressure on Russia and in terms of economic, financial and social impacts in Europe. The office of French President Emmanuel Macron said on Tuesday evening that the country had to coordinate with the European Union before taking any further steps, but acknowledged Europe's need to reduce its reliance on Russian energy. "The United States is not dependent on Russian oil and gas, but the European partners are, Emmanuel Macron's office said in a statement. We have a long-term policy of getting rid of the dependence on Russian oil and gas, but in the immediate future, we need to discuss this with our European partners. While Italy is very much dependent on Russian gas, the nation's government has said that if the European Union decided to cut off its consumption of Russian gas and oil, Italy would not oppose the effort. The direct US economic impact from the loss of Russian oil is likely to be notable, though less severe than what would happen in Europe. According to the International Energy Agency, IEA, the United States imported less than 700,000 barrels of oil per day from Russia in 2021. That represents less than 10% of what the United States imports globally. Higher global oil and gas commodity prices and rising prices at the pump will add to the inflationary pain that is already dogging American consumers. Prices are climbing at the fastest pace in the past 40 years, and data this week is expected to show that the annual increase climbed higher in February. Rising gas prices will exacerbate that trend. The national average price hit $4.17 on Tuesday, according to the AAA, a new high for regular unleaded gas. There will be costs as well here in the United States, President Joe Biden said. Republicans and Democrats alike understand that. Mr. Omar Sharif said U.S. inflation could peak at 8.3% in March, given the jump in gas prices. Before the conflict, he had expected it to ease down to 2.7% by the end of the year, but now he is expecting a rate closer to 4.5%. Higher gas prices also eat into consumers' budgets, preventing them from spending on other things, so a ban could also have consequences for the overall economic growth in the United States. High gas prices could be a liability for Democrats during a midterm election year, given they hit American voters right in the wallet. Republicans have already seized on gas prices as a talking point. Under Joe Biden, families are paying more for gas than ever before, Ronna McDaniel, chairwoman of the Republican National Committee, said in a statement on Tuesday, 8th of March. But the White House is emphasizing that the price increases are the result of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, and President Biden pointed out that the United States and its partners are releasing global petroleum reserves.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahan Abbott, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The Islamic Jihad movement held a national conference for women in the Gaza Strip on the occasion of International Women's Day. The conference, titled Woman is the Icon of Resistance, highlighted the role of Palestinian women in fighting the Israeli occupation and their struggle for freedom and justice. Palestinian women in the Gaza Strip paid a heavy toll during Israel's war on coastal enclave last year. According to human rights groups, the Israeli regime killed 60 women and 22 children in 2021.
We are supporting our women. We called the international, we addressed the international human rights to support our women, asking the international committee to protect the women, to protect the children, to stop the occupation forces against the women in Palestine.
addressing the conference through satellite transmission, Islamic Jihad Secretary General Dr. Ziad Nakhala praised the role of Palestinian women and their struggle against the Israeli regime for more than seven decades.
Palestinian women will not allow anyone to stop her resistance, consider it to be a red line. Palestinian women share military and political struggle with men. Palestinian women has given a lot for her homeland and abroad.
Conference attendees discussed ways of developing new strategies for women to confront the Israeli regime and its illegal practices, especially against women.
Palestinian women today meeting in Gaza to discuss about the role for women, for Palestinian women, and to discuss issues about how to defend the Palestinian in Palestine.
The annual event also tackled ways of bringing international attention to the plight of Palestinian women.
Palestinian women say that they will continue their struggle against the Israeli regime until the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken wrapped up a visit to the leaders of six European nations, plus a visit with the European Union and Israel's foreign minister, with a closed-door meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron. Washington has just announced a ban on Russian fossil fuels, but Blinken has apparently not convinced the European Union to immediately sever energy ties with their primary supplier. Russia announced they would cut its oil supplies to Europe if they introduced energy sanctions, which would have a devastating economic impact, perhaps globally. In what many say is an effort to avoid peace and increase the likelihood of a major war, Blinken recently announced that NATO members can send fighter jets to Ukraine. The U.S. and Europe have already provided significant military aid to Ukraine and imposed sanctions so potentially sweeping that Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin recently said they were, quote, like a war.
France is not directly concerned in this conflict, and yet they've already overdone it. When their foreign minister declared an all-out economic and financial war against Russia, that is an act of war. However, there's no economic coherence here because Europe completely depends on Russia for gas, petrol, and titanium, while the loss of export sales to Russia would be a catastrophe for European agriculture.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky recently announced that he, quote, understood that NATO is not prepared to accept Ukraine, end quote, which appears to be a concession to one of Russia's primary demands to end its military operation. The risk of expanding the conflict is a major concern, and with Washington giving Russia a cold shoulder since their offensive, Macron has served as the West's primary mediator with Moscow.
Macron has failed in his mediations because he and Germany have not been able to convince Ukraine to respect the Minsk agreements. If Macron had been able to convince Ukraine of this, then things could have been quite different. France should have been able to achieve this, but the United States obviously didn't want it.
Since 2014, some 14,000 people have been killed in Ukraine. Russia's offensive on February 24th has produced almost 500 civilian deaths and nearly 2 million refugees, according to the United Nations. In recent years, many politicians have argued that the European Union is necessary in order to have peace on the continent. However, forming an EU army, sending arms within Europe, and waging a sanctions war which is sure to hurt the Russian people doesn't seem peaceful to many. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Members of Iran's Assembly of Experts have held their second biannual meeting this year. That's the ninth official session of the current assembly, which was elected in 2016.
Members of the Assembly of Experts convene twice a year to review the latest domestic and global issues. This time, Ebrahim Raisi, who's one of the Assembly's members, has participated as Iran's president.
Raisi was invited to highlight his administration's achievements and review the challenges it faces. During this session, Chairman of the Assembly of Experts, Ahmad Jannati, urged President Raisi to take practical steps to address the economic problems of Iranians and improve their livelihood.
We need to improve the livelihood of the less privileged strata. The Honorable President must take steps to make this happen. I hope other members of this cabinet follow suit and help the needy have a better life. This is the least we should do as a duty.
The Assembly of Experts was established in 1983, almost 4 years after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Its main task is to monitor the performance of the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution. The experts should also elect a new leader in the event of the demise, resignation, or dismissal of the current leader.
The Assembly of Experts was the entity that elected Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei as the new leader after Imam Khomeini passed away in 1988. Not only does it supervise the performance of the leader, but it plays a crucial role in protecting the political establishment.
The Assembly of Experts is currently a body of 88 Islamic jurists. The entity consists of a leadership council and 6 committees. Members are elected by direct public vote for an 8-year term. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Palestinians rallied on Monday in front of the Red Cross office in Gaza to drum up support for thousands of prisoners held in Israeli jails. Their solidarity action comes as around 450 administrative detainees have been refusing to show up for their military court hearings for the third month in a row. Administrative detainees are denied due process, and their detention orders can be renewed for indefinite periods of time.
For the third month, the Palestinian administrative detainees are boycotting the Israeli military courts in order to protest the administrative detention. And now the Palestinian detainees need all kinds of support by the Palestinian community and the international community.
Palestinian prisoners are also subject to torture and psychological pressure by the Israeli prison authorities, including daily raids and solitary confinement. Currently, some 5,000 Palestinians are languishing inside Israeli jails, including minors and women.
The Israeli administration, they conducted series of attacks and aggression against prisoners, especially women. This gathering asking international community to put pressure to Israeli government in order to facilitate their rights and stop the aggression against Palestinian prisoners.
Palestinian prisoners regularly stage hunger strikes and protest against both the administrative detention policy and harsh detention conditions. Prisoners' advocacy groups have raised the alarm over the inhumane conditions inside Israeli jails.
Nowadays, the situation is going to explode inside Israeli prisons because of the Israeli measures that aimed to break the will of Palestinian detainees and to confiscate their rights.
Experts say Palestinian prisoners will continue to suffer inside Israeli jails as long as the international community keeps turning a blind eye to Tel Aviv's violations of their rights. Statistics by human rights groups show that the Israeli regime has arrested over 1 million Palestinians since 1967. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Joint statement by the diplomatic missions of the Western countries in Islamabad has created an uproar in Pakistan. The statement posted on the social media platforms presses Pakistan to condemn Russia. The statement was signed by the envoys of European countries and endorsed by the U.S. Embassy in Islamabad.
The move by the Western diplomatic missions here has drawn strong reaction from the Pakistani government. The Foreign Office has summoned the envoys of the Western countries to tell them that issuing public statements against the host country is not in line with the diplomatic protocols.
On Sunday, Prime Minister Imran Khan doubled down on the European ambassadors and made it clear that Pakistan is not their slave.
I want to ask the European ambassadors, did you write such a letter to India? What do you think of us? Are we your slaves? That whatever you say, we will do.
Pakistan has maintained a fine balance in the ongoing conflict between Russia and the West over Ukraine. The reason Pakistan refused to condemn Russia stems from its growing ties with Moscow.
But the only thing that I can say from Pakistan's government perspective, that Pakistan
wants de-escalation. Honestly, Pakistan wants end of the war or end of bombing or end of aggression anywhere for that matter in the world.
Pakistan has remained in the Western camp for decades, but now wants to diversify its foreign policy options. It was because of this reason that despite pressure from the West, Pakistan abstained from the voting on a resolution against Russia at the UN General Assembly session. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
Under the title, The Detention of Fuel Ships is a U.S. Decision and Our Choice is Yemen's Hurricane Operations, thousands of Yemenis took to the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities to protest against the Saudi blockade imposed on the country.
The Yemeni people today came out to send a message to the world that they will not sit idle against this stifling siege backed by the U.S. and enforced under the supervision of the U.K. and members of the Saudi-led coalition. The siege is aimed to bring the Yemenis to their knees.
The protests are taking place amid the worst fuel crisis in Yemen since the beginning of the war, as Saudi Arabia keeps seizing Yemeni oil vessels despite obtaining entry permits by the UN. The long lines of people queuing at fuel stations in the capital Sana'a have reached 4 kilometers for the first time.
The Saudi-led coalition continues to seize Yemeni oil ships amid the silence of the United Nations. Meanwhile, the UN Security Council overlooks the violations of Saudi Arabia and its allies. We call on the international community to look at Yemen as it does with Ukraine and to stand by the millions of Yemenis who have been suffering for 7 years.
Recently, Saudi Arabia tightened the siege it imposes on Yemen and led the war-torn country to a harsh fuel shortage. This has pushed the healthcare system to the verge of collapse, threatening the lives of millions of Yemenis, including children.
Protesters hold the U.S. responsible for supporting the Saudi detention of oil ships, saying Washington is a major partner in the war against their country. They believe that the Yemeni army operations against Emirati and Saudi territories, especially those against Aramco facilities, are the only way to lift the siege. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
In a historic and surprising decision, the European Union has decided to give refugees from war the instant right to live within the bloc and freely travel. They also have the right to work. They even now have rights to housing and medical care. There is one catch. This only applies to Ukrainians. These rights are not being extended to refugees from Palestine, Yemen, Syria, Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, Mali, the Central African Republic, or any of the other countries in which Western armed interventions provoked refugee crises. Seemingly no one would begrudge Ukrainian refugees their human rights, but many in France are wondering why they are getting treated totally differently from black, brown, and Muslim asylum seekers.
Apparently, you have to be white and Christian to be treated properly by the European Union. That's the sad reality, and it's totally unacceptable. We cannot discriminate according to religion, nationality, or color, which are all things which we don't choose. What we can choose is to be human and to have solidarity with each other.
Drowning by the dozens in Calais, France. Freezing to death in Poland. Packed into camps in Italy, building steel fences, denying basic sanitation, fear-mongering about refugees election after election. The long-running European refugee crisis has taken a new turn, and yet standard European policy remains mostly unchanged. An outcry is growing for the European Union to extend their unity, and many say their humanity, towards non-white refugees.
We have to receive refugees and give them normal, humane conditions, regardless of what continent they come from. We have seen acts towards refugees on the Polish border, and we can't allow such things to happen in France. The government has to treat all refugees with total equality and with urgent measures like proper lodging.
Many say the open discrimination, which reveals a deep racism and xenophobia, as well as an arrogant hypocrisy, will ultimately stain the European Union around the world and at home. Many in the French media are describing Ukrainian refugees as somehow qualitatively superior to other asylum seekers. However, many hope that the European Union realizes soon that all refugees are equal and deserving of dignity, assistance, and the same rights without discrimination. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
When it comes to NATO support and American leadership, we have better ask Afghans. They have the experience of 20 years of Western forces presence in their country. Afghans had counted on Western powers at the beginning, but what the US and its allies really brought for Afghanistan?
Betrayal, definitely. The US and its allies' presence led our country to gallop backward. However, they failed in Afghanistan and ruined our country. We didn't gain anything from dealing with the West except destruction, poverty, and many, many crises.
Sayed Bakir Kazemi was an advisor to the former Afghan president Ashraf Ghani. He believes Ghani's government easily collapsed because he trusted the US and relied on NATO forces.
It is obvious and historically proven that any government or administration that trusted the U.S. or relied on the West ended up with failure and downfall. This experience is repeated in many countries. Former Afghan President Ashraf Ghani did the same mistake and faced a bad downfall.
Some Afghan experts also blame crisis in Ukraine on the U.S., saying nations are falling victim to the U.S. policies of creating war and terror.
The U.S. is using Ukrainians for its own benefits. Western powers don't care about the collapse and destruction of a nation or government. They follow their own devil policies. Afghanistan's experience is repeating in Ukraine. I hope Ukrainians' leaders learn from Afghanistan disaster and crisis ends in their country.
After 20 years of invasion, the U.S. and its allies hastily abandoned Afghanistan in mid-August last year. Today, the country is dealing with the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Afghans are critical of U.S. policies and its legacy on their soil. They consider trusting the U.S. as a big mistake that no country should ever make it. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
British Muslims massed outside Pakistan's High Commission in London, condemning sectarian killings of the country's Shia minority. The vigil comes after a suicide bomber struck inside a Shia Muslim mosque in the northwestern city of Peshawar during Friday prayers last week, killing around 60 worshippers and wounding some 196 people.
The attack may have taken place thousands of miles away, but the pain and hurt that has been felt has resonated across the Muslim world. As you can see behind me, well over 100 people have turned out here today to not only send their thoughts and prayers back to Pakistan, but also to vent their anger and fury at the fact that these types of attacks are still taking place even now.
Daesh claimed responsibility for the attack. The terror group has threatened more violence against Pakistan's Shia. But these worshippers issued strong words of their own.
Shias are like a seed. You bury one and it sprouts out a million more. And they can continue to do whatever they're doing. And I look into their eyes right now and I say, you continue to do what you're doing, but you will never succeed in ending the Shia of Imam Ali, alayhi salam.
We shouldn't have to live in fear that if we go to pray on a Friday, we won't come back. We should know that we're safe and that we're able to do all of this freely. And I want everybody to understand this, that we're taking action because this has happened several times and this needs to stop.
If becoming a creature like you is called being a Muslim, then I think I'm fine with the religion that I stand with. And I think I'm fine. All of these people that are here also stand with me.
Friday's attack was the deadliest in the country since 2018. When 149 people lost their lives, including 9 children, in a terrorist explosion at an election rally in Balochistan. With more than one sectarian terrorist group active in Pakistan, many fear these bloodthirsty bombings will continue to plague Pakistan's religious minorities. Robert Carter, London.
Waiting until the final moment to register in order to skirt laws on equal media time for election candidates, French President Emmanuel Macron confirmed he will run for re-election. The slate of candidates is now finalized. Macron began his term hailed as the new leader of the free world, but his once-in-a-century repression of the Yellow Vests has many calling him a liberal strongman who enforces rubber bullet liberalism. Macron is leading in the first round and has a comfortable lead in the second round of roughly 60-40 over far-right mainstay Marine Le Pen. The Russian special military operation in Ukraine has given Macron a 5-point increase in the past 2 weeks, and the ending of extremely strict coronavirus rules in mid-March may lead to another increase. However, Western polling agencies have become severely discredited in recent years, with France's largest newspaper refusing to run any of them.
I don't believe the polls, which are all conducted by private companies who deliver the results, which they are paid to deliver. Macron's track record is catastrophic. He's achieved nothing for the average person. It's truly the dictatorship of a total capitalist. France has really reached the bottom.
The campaign hasn't been centered around the incumbent's record, but openly Islamophobic ideas. Despite running third or fourth in the polls, far-right convicted racist Eric Zemmour has been allowed by media executives to set the agenda.
The rise of the extreme right is totally insupportable, and we have no choice but to confront these ideas of fascism, racism, and xenophobia. France must stand up as one and say no. I'm sure that France will, and I'm sure no far-right candidate will reach the second round.
The resulting lack of serious issues appears certain to produce record abstention. Just 52% of France is interested in the vote this year, compared to 78% for the previous election.
3 weeks ago, all of the leading candidates were openly pro-Russian, but France's media has been swept by a wave of war hysteria, which usually benefits the incumbent. However, for many, at least that has pushed Islamophobia off the agenda, at least for now. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The U.S. military is supposedly there to protect people. It does the opposite, said John Reich, a Seattle-based writer specializing in American bases in Okinawa. Dear listeners, what you heard was part of an article written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading Alarming Levels of Forever Chemicals Found in Water Near U.S. Bases in Okinawa. Stay tuned for more. As the U.S. military continues construction of a controversial new base at Henoko Bay, Okinawa, the recent discovery of extreme levels of highly toxic forever chemicals in local waterways and groundwater has renewed long-standing opposition to the American occupation of large portions of the Japanese archipelago. The Asahi Shimbun reported recently that water quality checks near U.S. bases in Okinawa found alarming levels of perfluorooctane sulfonic acid, that is PFOS, at 38 locations, or more than 70% of tested sites. More than 1,000 nanograms of PFOS and other substances per liter of water, or 20 times higher than the Japanese Environment Ministry's provisional target of 50 nanograms per liter, were detected at 8 sites near 2 U.S. bases. Groundwater collected from below a private home in Kadena Town tested at 2,300 nanograms per liter of PFOS and other substances, or 46 times higher than the government target. John Range, a Seattle-based writer specializing in American bases in Okinawa, said the U.S. military is supposedly there to protect people. It does the opposite. Imagine the uproar if China were responsible for this PFOS contamination. But since the U.S. is to blame, it will be swept under the rug. Commonly called forever chemicals because they do not biodegrade and accumulate in the human body, per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, which include PFOS, PFOA, and Genex, have many uses, from non-stick cookware to waterproof clothing to firefighting foam. According to the U.S. Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, PFAS is linked to cancers of kidneys and testicles, low infant weight, suppressed immune function, and other adverse health effects. A study published in October by the Environmental Working Group EWG found nearly 42,000 potential sources of PFAS that could contaminate drinking water throughout the United States. Additionally, EWG reported in August that Pentagon documents showed that at least 385 U.S. military facilities nationwide are contaminated with PFAS. In Okinawa, elevated PFAS levels have been detected in waterways, soil, residents' blood, and the drinking water consumed by 450,000 people. In August, the U.S. Marines at Air Base Futenma defied a desist order from local authorities and dumped 64,000 liters of PFOS contaminated water into the public sewer system, an act that sparked protest and drew condemnation from the Okinawan and Japanese governments. The toxic wastewater was produced during the firefighting drills using foam containing PFOS and other hazardous chemicals. Cleanup cost expected to run around $800,000 will be shouldered by the Japanese government. Asahi Shimbun editors wrote at the time, "We are at a loss for words at the erratic attitude and behavior of the U.S. forces stationed in Okinawa Prefecture. The act is downright impermissible. The U.S. forces' high-handed manner will only deepen the rift between themselves and the Okinawans and entrench the latter's mistrust into something indelible." That mistrust is as old as the U.S. military presence in Okinawa, which was conquered during the closing months of the Second World War at the cost of over 100,000 civilian lives. Since then, U.S. troops, who occupy 31 bases in an archipelago roughly half the land area of Long Island, have committed thousands of crimes, including dozens of alleged murders and over 120 alleged rapes, often with impunity due to a Status of Forces Agreement, SOFA, written by Americans for their own protection. U.S. military forces have also fired and lost nuclear weapons in local waters, leaked the deadly nerve agent, sarin, and exposed residents to chlorine gas, to name but a handful of the most egregious environmental incidents.